by Ikritam, ostracized, Vita, wantingly, Pana, to drinking, Ratam, addicted, Shasvat, always, Saparyam, in worship, Katam, how, Arati, does he deserve? Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yayati cursed the dynasty of the Yadavas, and ever since then they have been ostracized by honest men and addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the inner meaning of the words of Shishupa to show how he continued to unintentionally glorify Lord Krishna and his Yadu dynasty. Even though the Yadus were cursed by Yayati, they have been relieved, Bhiskritam, of this curse by great saints, and consequently they have been raised to a position of royal sovereignty by such persons as Kartavirya. Thus they have become absorbed in Pana, protecting the earth. Considering all this, how does Krishna, chief of the Yadus, deserve useless worship? Varta. Rather, he deserves occult worship. Read the next verse. Ramarshi sevatandesham hetvaite brahmavachasam samudram yugam arshvita vadante tashiva puja. These Yadavas have abandoned the holy lands inhabited by the saintly sages and have instead taken shelter of a fortress in the sea, a place where no brahminical principles are observed. There, just like thieves, they harass their subjects. Purport. The words Brahmarshi Sevatam Desham, holy lands inhabited by saintly sages, allude to the district of Mathura. Srila Prabhupada writes, Shishupala went crazy because of Krishna's being elected the supreme first worship person in the meeting, and he spoke so irresponsibly that it appeared that he had lost all his good fortune. Text 38. Eva madin yabhadrani babhasi nasta mangala novacha kinchit bhagavan yata simha shiva rutam. Sukadeva Goswami continued, bereft of all good fortune, Shishupala spoke these and other insults, but the Supreme Lord said nothing, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Om Jnana Tamanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Nena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadada Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So of course, we all know that at every moment when we look out and perceive the world and other people, we have a choice. We can see the faults, or we can see the good qualities. Actually, this is the same thing. It's just like a coin. It's the flip side of the same coin. Prabhupada always said that fault finding or envy, this fault finding arises from envy, is indirect appreciation. So one thing you can do if you're struggling with a fault finding or envious mentality is just to directly appreciate the person. So we always have that choice to fault find or to see the glories. Now, Shishupala, because of his envy, his high degree of envy, is seeing the faults in Krishna. He is seeing that the all the people, all the great kings and sages and so forth of the that have attended King Yudhisthira's Rajasuya sacrifice have elected Krishna as the supreme object of worship. And Shishupal doesn't like that, because Krishna has slighted him many times in the past. Shishupal was supposed to be married to Rukmini Devi, according to the plan of Rukmi, her elder brother. But, of course, she'd already become attracted to Krishna and sent a letter via a reliable brahmana. And Krishna came and stole Rukmini from the Svayamvara ceremony. It's right in front of the... she wasn't the Svayamvara. It was the procession before the marriage. Krishna just, like a lion taking its booty, not caring for the jackals, just stepped in, placed Rukmini upon his chariot and slowly drove off. And this was humiliating, actually, for Shishupal and Shishupal's associates. They had all fallen off their horses, or fainted, because of the fresh, pure beauty of Rukmini Devi and her budding youth. She is Lakshmi. So beautiful that seeing her beauty, her sweetness, her purity, because this is one of the opulences that create real beauty, is purity. If one is pure, then one's opulences of beauty will strike the heart much deeper than if somebody is not so pure. We can see this practically. That's why to maintain purity before marriage is very valuable, because it allows for a deeper bond. So Rukmini Devi's beauty was so wonderful, and they all fainted. She walked past and they just kind of went, fell off their horses, dropped their weapons, and then at that moment Krishna just stepped out, invited Rukmini onto his chariot and drove off slowly, nonchalantly. And they took their weapons. After once they regained their composure and realized what had happened, they were furious. They grabbed their weapons, their armor, and chased Krishna. But of course then Balaram stepped in between the between Krishna's escaping chariot and all the soldiers that had come up behind to attack him, and he defeated them. There was a bloody battle, and they had to submit to Balaram's might. So that, along with a bunch of other things, really meant that Shishupal didn't like Krishna very much. And seeing Krishna being glorified, he became envious. This is natural psychology for a conditioned soul. Of course, this is the Lord's Leela, so it's not as cheap and lowly as our conditioned affairs. But the psychology, you know, there's parallels. You know, if you see somebody who's very good at something, and they've done something to slight you or upset you, you try and cut them down in your mind. And if you get an opportunity, you cut them down with your words. This is envy. Envy is very poisonous, though. Envy is the fundamental root into our conditioned existence. And it also causes a lot of social difficulties. There can be no problems at all, everybody can be nice, but if envy is bubbling away in the heart, when you look out, it will create a problem, it will create a fire in the mind. This is envy. And nasty words will come out on the tongue because of this envy. So envy should be controlled. In a good way, like Srila Prabhupada said, is to transform it directly into appreciation. Often the best way to do this, you can do it in the mind, but the powerful way to do it is actually just to openly glorify a person. You know, I really appreciate your good qualities. You don't have to tell them, and actually I'm horrendously envious. Because once you tell them, actually, your envy will change, and you find the quality will change. You'll see the person's humility. If they're a good devotee, you'll see their humility. And also, it's a loving exchange. Mm-hmm. And then, seeing the person's soft heart, your envy will be dissipated. Mm-hmm. But Shishupal's not doing this. Shishupal has a fly-like mentality. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between a fly and a bumblebee? Mm-hmm. Sweet honeybee. If there is a rubbish dump, say that if there's a rose garden, you know, with all these beautiful blossoming roses, a pond with lotuses in it, so many wonderful nectar, so much wonderful nectar is there, and the fly comes into the garden, ignoring all the roses and the nice flowers, it'll find a piece of stool, you know, dropped by some passing animal, and sit on it. With great pleasure. Vice versa, the bumblebee can go into the rubbish dump where all the nasty things, trash, rubbish, and rotting things. And somewhere in that rubbish dump there'll be a flower sprouting out of the refuse. And the bumblebee will ignore all the rubbish and just sit on the flower. So this is represents the mentality. The fly-like mentality and the bee-like mentality. The fly-like mentality overlooks all the good qualities in a person, or in that situation, or in a scene, or organization, whatever. And simply looks, where is the fault? Where is the stool? You know? And then they make a big deal out of it. You know, they point it out, and they write articles on the internet about it. And they are, this is their passion, you know, to magnify the stool. Of course, this doesn't do them any good, and it's very socially damaging, actually. Vice versa, conversely, the person with the bumblebee-like mentality, even if there's many faults, they don't make such a big deal. They overlook them. They're charitable. One meaning of being charitable, having a charitable character, is that you forgive easily. You overlook faults, minor offenses like that. And instead, the bumblebee-like mentality says, what is the good quality? Let me magnify the good qualities. Let me glorify the good qualities. And this creates a very nice atmosphere in the community. Because people are actually more encouraged by a reinforcement of the good that they do than they are from being corrected and told off and put down because of the bad that they do. There's a management teaching that says, help people reach their full potential. Catch them doing something right. So rather than, yeah, everything's going fine, so I won't say anything. And then as soon as something goes wrong, you point it out. This is actually demotivating. Better to catch the person doing something right. More of that, please. And then you'll see that they will... Because everybody likes to be appreciated. When you feel appreciated, it's one of the deep needs of the living entity, is to be appreciated. And when a person gets appreciation, they become very happy. And it's naturally the living entity's nature to pursue pleasurable experiences that make them happy and to avoid unpleasant experiences that make them unhappy. Mm. Or distressed. So you can, you know, fear is a motivation, but more than that, attraction, there's a positive side to motivation. Just like, you know, some scriptures of the world, they emphasize that one should fear the Lord. They should fear God, because if you don't obey the laws of God, then you will suffer. There is a place where there's always a furnace burning. There is a lake of fire which is always blazing eternally, and you can go and sit in there if you disobey, and you will suffer eternally. That's one, you know, one way to motivate people. Oh, okay, I better take spiritual life seriously. But another way to motivate people is to give them a higher taste. So in the same way, appreciation is actually very motivating. It reinforces the good that we do. So it's very healthy to have a bee-like mentality. If we have a fly-like mentality, we should try and correct that by learning how to appreciate and by learning how to be charitable. Shishupal, as Srila Prabhupada says, he's gone crazy out of envy for Krishna. He's just gone crazy, he's lost it. You know. He's venting all his emotions and frustrations. You know, they're all coming out in his tongue. And this is what often happens, you know, if you get upset and then you say, I'm going to give a person a piece of my mind, a piece of my glorious mind. I'm just going to kind of slime them with it, you know. And all, you know, your perceived offences and everything that you've got bubbling away inside of you, you throw on that person. But this is very, very destructive, actually, in any relationship. You know, it's often said that women, especially in relationships, when they get a sense of hurt, they connect with all the other times when they felt the same way, and they bring it all out and say, anyway, this is completely unrelated, but remember the time when you did this and that and this other thing. And it's not just women, it's everybody does that, you know. If somebody's in your bad books, you remember all the bad that they've done. If somebody's in your good books, then you remember all the good that they've done. But actually this is very destructive, because you make a mountain out of a molehill. Molehill. And, you know, cause a lot more... cause damage, and that's in proportion to the actual situation, which might be quite trivial. So, Shishupal has gone crazy. You know, all his emotions of envy and frustration, and basically hate for Krishna, are coming out on his tongue in a tirade, and he's making all these accusations. Who is this Krishna? Huh? We don't even know his Varna. He's a cowherd boy, apparently. Herding cows in the forest, why should we worship him? What is his Varna anyway? Who knows? You know, some say he's a Kshatriya, some say he's a cowherd boy. He follows no obvious regulative principles. How does he fit into our Vedic society? He doesn't. He's built a city in the sea, and Vedas aren't even heard there. All these things he's saying, which are completely 90% ridiculous. Yeah, actually, completely ridiculous. I mean, because of his fly-like mentality, he's taking Shri Krishna's good qualities and glories and turning them into faults. But then, what does Krishna's devotee do? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he takes the faults that, or the words of Shishupal, and then spins them around. Actually, these are glorifications of Krishna. Because they have a bumblebee-like mentality, the devotees. And they love Krishna. Just like Rukmini Devi did that, Krishna was criticizing himself. How can you take me as a serious life partner when I have all these faults? I'm actually a coward, that's why I built my city in the sea. Because I'm scared of all these rival kings, so I just hide out in the sea. I'm a coward. now you are free to go and take another husband. I mean, he was devastated. But once she regained her composure, once Krishna confirmed that actually he was just joking, trying to make her angry, and she regained her composure, she actually said, "My dear Krishna," and proceeded to say, to turn all the things he'd said, to deride himself, into glorifications. This is the devotee's mentality. How could you say anything nasty about Krishna? Surely it's an illusion. Surely we've just misheard, actually. Let's reinterpret this. So actually, to criticize the Lord or the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord is very destructive to one's bhakti-vata, one's kripa of devotion. Very destructive. There are different reasons why people bloop or fall down from Krishna consciousness. Normally it's a combination of things. Central desire is certainly there. And if one is not getting a higher taste, one's desire for sense pleasure will become overwhelming. Often that's combined with offenses, though, improper ways of thinking about the devotees, about the devotional community, about Krishna, which cause one to lose its taste. And then, if the taste goes down, a pleasure-seeking living entity we have, you begin to look elsewhere. But offenses themselves are very destructive. Like a mad elephant, you can just crush all the hard work you have tending your devotional garden for so many years. You can just crush it in an instant like that. So, very much guard against offenses. Like the devotee, when somebody criticizes him or her, the devotee takes the humble position. Just like the bee-like mentality searches out the good among so much garbage, and the fly-like mentality searches out the bad among so much good, the sincere devotee listens to the words, which might be full of so much garbage or offensive mentality, and seeks, what is actually Krishna trying to tell me through these words? Because the devotee always treats life and the experiences that life brings as indications from the Lord of how to grow and advance in Krishna consciousness. So that's the devotee's mentality. Where is the good here? But the criticizing party, it's never good for them to criticize. Just like my spiritual master, Bhagavata Swami. You know, naturally when you're a leader, you know, you have a high profile and people like to take shots at you. So there was one situation in Auckland many years ago now, and he was staying on the farm. He was trying to, there's a temple on a farm in Auckland, and he was trying to do some things to get the community moving in a positive direction. And one devotee came and had darshan with him, and she just came out with a tirade of aggressive remarks. You've got this fault, you've got that fault, who do you think you are, blah, 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 blah. And normally when somebody attacks us like that, we just, the mind doesn't like it, you know. The mind just like, and then immediately it's preparing its own retorts, you know. It's poisonous retorts. No, but being a sincere devotee, Bhagavata Swami sat there humbly listening, and at the end he said, "Thank you. That was good for me, but I'm not so sure if it was good for you." definitely, according to what I've learned in the Shastra, that wasn't good for you. But thank you, it was good for me. And such a Yeah, such a humble mentality can change an aggressor's heart. Like, I remember I was in Sydney about 5 years ago, and I was distributing some books in the city. And there was this, always this group of couriers in the afternoon who'd sit on the steps and sun themselves. And I went to them and I would try to offer them a book. And this one guy just got really angry and started, like, aggressing against me. You know, he didn't like the fact that I was offering him a book. And I just said, I'm sorry, but can I ask, what is your problem? You know, I've not come to commit any offense. I've simply come to serve you. And why do you have so much anger in your mind? Surely you're the one that's suffering from all this anger. When I said words like that, immediately his attitude turned. And I was like, wow, that's true actually. You know, the what is this one statement? Hate is wishing the other person to die but drinking the poison yourself. So when I said like that, I didn't respond in kind. I didn't return the aggression. His attitude changed, and he actually bought the book in the end. And he was quite impressed. So yeah, that is the proper way of responding, is like that. Now, sometimes it's legitimate. There are actually faults. And sometimes it's necessary to correct faults. In every community, every organization needs management. And part of the duty of management is to correct faulty things. To get the engine of the organization running smoothly. So things happen effectively and powerfully. If you have a lot of faults, then it's like having a lot of problems with the engine. But someone thinks management needs to fault find. Fault find and then fault fix. But it has to be done with the servant's mentality. Has to be done with the servant's mentality. Not simply like a fly relishing the stool. Ah, I found some stool. Joy. Let me magnify it. No, it's not like that. It's like, oh, here's a problem. In service to Srila Prabhupada, in service to our spiritual masters and the Supreme Lord, let us correct these faults and shortcomings so we can maximize our effectiveness. So the service mentality must be there. What happens if you are younger? Because I was just reading in the Bhagavatam the other day, like at the canto, that that a devotee should give mercy to his juniors, should develop a friendly connection with those on the same level, and should humbly serve, or meekly serve, those in a superior position. This is the etiquette. So what happens if you see a senior devotee performing some activity that you have doubts about? Perhaps their attitude, their words, their actions are questionable in your mind. How to deal with that? Do you just go and stand in their face and let out a tirade of what you actually think of them and their behavior? Is that going to be good for your bhakti lata? Not especially. Krishna won't appreciate that because it's against the etiquette. But at the same time, you shouldn't just be blind. No, the procedure is that perceiving some fault or shortcoming is to go to someone who is that person's equal or even better, their senior, and say like this: I could be wrong. In fact, I'm probably wrong, but this is what I see. What do you think? Is my perception faulty, or is there actually some truth in it? And what is the best way to deal with this? And that way, the thing can be corrected gentle way, in a proper way, and everything will be nice. So that's the procedure. So here we have Krishna's response. Shukadeva Goswami continued. Reputable with fortune, Shishupal spoke these and other insults. The Supreme Lord said nothing, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. So in one sense, this is the ultimate assertion of power by Krishna. Shishupal is practically foaming at the mouth, blowing smoke from his ears. He's lost it. He's gone crazy. Krishna just simply sits there, deep like the ocean, not even slightly ruffled by his attacks. See, normally we're trapped in the modes of nature, and we have what's called false ego. And a false ego is highly sensitive, actually. Anybody, like, even scratches the false ego, and we respond with poison. The whole mind goes into, like, contortions. Of course, that's because one is under the modes and one has shackled with false ego. But Krishna is not like us. Krishna is Supreme Lord, inexhaustible, above the modes. It's his energy. He doesn't fall into such illusion. And therefore, it doesn't even ruffle him in the slightest. You know, he's just looking at Shishupal, completely admire, and it's just like, it's no big deal. It's Shishupal's illusion. So this is the ultimate assertion of power, actually. To not respond in kind, because often such an antagonist is hoping, you know, their victory is if they make you angry. If you don't respond in that way, you actually win their respect. Or if they're so envious that they're not even going to give you that, at least you show to others that you're in superior consciousness. So Krishna is not at all disturbed. It says here that he said nothing, just like a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Lion is the king of the jungle. Jackals, they go around. The lion goes by himself. The lion is proud, lion is powerful. The jackals go in little mobs. They scavenge. The lion doesn't care for the jackals. He just walks proudly by. Sometimes the jackals might have some carcass or something that they're gnawing on, and the lion just walks and swats a few of them and then takes his share. So Shishupal, in his illusion and his envy, is just like a jackal, and Krishna is not taking it seriously at all, demonstrating his position as the Supreme Lord. Of course, we see that Krishna's devotees, who are in the assembly, they take the insult, the attack upon Krishna very seriously, because that's their duty. In one sense, because it's the duty, because we have, there's two things. There's dharma, vaidhi, one should follow because this is the proper thing to do. And then there's raga-ruga, or the spontaneous feeling, actually, which makes you want to do it because you have a taste for it. So all the devotees in the assembly, it's their duty to retaliate against such a faulty, offensive mentality displayed in Shishupal. But more than that, it's their feeling. It's like poison entering the ears, burning their heart. Therefore, they take up their weapons and they're ready to kill Shishupal. And Shishupal's like, he's playing off their anger. Ha ha! Even if Krishna's not upset, look at them, at least they're upset. His devotees, he's waving his sword around. And they're prepared to kill him. Of course, if there's a fight in the sacrificial arena and blood is spilled, then the whole ceremony will be finished. So out of spite, Shishupal thinks, well, even if I don't survive this tirade that I've made, at least I'll wreck King Yudhisthira's yagya. So as they prepare to attack, Krishna pacifies them, takes up the Sudarshan Chakra and severs the head of Shishupal. And then Shishupal's life force, spirit soul, enters the body of Krishna, showing that the Lord is all good. Even if the Lord kills you, that is good for you. If the Lord saves you, if the Lord kills you, that is good. That is the vision of the devotee. That is the reality. Even if I go to heaven or hell, if I still have devotional service, then it's heaven. It's the spiritual world. If Krishna punishes me, this is the vision of the highest devotees. What is that verse? Ashlishlava Paratam Panashtumam Adashanam Namahatam Kurotuva. Itat? What is it again? Karanyam Yashasvaitinamaha. That even if Krishna embraces me or breaks my heart, still he is my worshipful Lord unconditionally. Even if Krishna makes me happy, that would be ecstasy. And if Krishna puts me into anxiety, that will also be ecstasy. And this is demonstrated actually by Lord Chaitanya. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya would stay up all night rubbing his face against the stones of his cell, and there would be sores everywhere and great anxiety apparently. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? But the devotees understood this is a display of his mahabhava, his highest love for Krishna, his deep attachment. So anything in relation to the Lord is good. And there's a thing, it's not just shanti. Now I'm inviting shanti. One feeling, just kind of like this relaxed. No, there's a variety of transcendental emotions, transcendental experiences to give drama to the eternal soul. Because we don't want just to be submerged in some bright white light and do nothing. This is not more attractive than the variegated experience of this world. That's why to try and attain the oneness is not really practical. So all experiences of the material world, whether they be anxiety or great bliss and ecstasy, they're all the same thing. Perfect emotions in relation to the Lord. And even if the Lord kills, that is good. Even if the Lord steals butter, that is good. If the Lord blesses, that is also good. This is what is meant by Krishna is all good. Okay, I think we'll stop there today. Any questions or comments? Yes.
You talked about offenses to the devotee. Mm-hmm. And it's not about offenses to the whole name, to blaspheme the devotee. But even if it's only in the mind and one doesn't say, is it the same offense?
Well, I would say, because the mind is how do we say it, pretty uncontrollable for most of us. So the mind comes up with so much nonsense. Here's an example. It's a pretty heavy example, but I'll tell it anyway because it illustrates the point. I was sitting in school, in high school once, and I had we were using knives, we were doing some craft, cutting out some things, and I put the blade out on the knife, and then my mind suddenly thought, you know, if I took this knife, I could slit somebody's throat. The mind suddenly thought that, and then I went, hang on, that's a really bad idea. So, in one sense, I'm not going to be put in jail for thinking that. But at the same time, my response was, that's a bad idea. That's not the proper way for me to think. So I think that kind of repentance or atonement within the mind, that's a sign of healthy internal conduct. If you just start blaspheming all the devotees in your mind, and yeah, this is great, I'm not going to say it because that'll be bad karma, but anyway, I'm just really going to get off on this, then that's very unhealthy. I think Krishna will take offense. But if the mind comes up, you know, you feel hurt or offended in some way by some small thing, or even by some big thing, and your mind generates some resentment, and then comes up with some poisonous options for retaliation, then that's the nature of the mind. How seriously you take that would determine, you know, what sort of reaction you'll get. If you understand that this is an appropriate way to think, and this is against Shastra, it's my duty to control the mind when it behaves like this, to do whatever it takes to dissipate that bad feeling, which might be approaching the person in a humble way and expressing your hurt, or and often that will dissipate the feeling. Somehow or other, you've got to dissipate it in a proper way. Otherwise, it'll come out in a subtle way through your glance, through your conduct to that person. If it doesn't, and eventually it could even come out in the tongue. So yeah, you can't stop the mind thinking, but you can select what is an appropriate response to a thought. So I think that's more your responsibility, is your conscious selection of thoughts, your response to your thoughts. Otherwise the mind will think so many things, and it's just natural. When the mind becomes pure, the devotee, what we're trying to do is fix our mind on Krishna, fix our mind on the holy name. And we try, and then all of a sudden, you know, just be thinking about something completely bizarre. You know, how did that happen? And then you pull the mind forcibly back to whatever you're supposed to be thinking about, the holy name, your service, whatever. So that is our practice, to pull the mind back to the proper thing. When we become purified, apparently it works the opposite way. You try to think about some nonsense, and then all of a sudden you find your mind thinking about Krishna again. It goes back to the holy name. So actually you find if you train your mind to respond properly, you know, some offense is caused. If you're practiced in controlling your mind, then you find that it becomes a lot easier. You know, anyway, we've been through this so many times, mind, you know, this is not a proper way to think, you know, the proper thing you should do is this, and very quickly you can fix the mind. Eventually it can become automatic, you know, this becomes a... Because you develop understanding of the mind, and you develop power over the mind. In the beginning, if we find it difficult to control the mind, often the best thing to do is to take guidance. You just go and reveal your mind to a senior devotee with a balanced view, with a caring view, and they can just probably say a few things and you just go and snap you out of it. That's happened so many times to me. I'll be in anxiety, all mixed up, and then you go and talk to a senior devotee, and what seemed overwhelming just becomes no big deal. They give you a proper perspective on it, they dissipate the tension surrounding the issue, and you're back on track. Is that okay? Any other questions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're saying that spiritual life isn't just peaceful, especially in general advice, because my mother's really bad at it. How can you explain why she believes that it's so much
like this? It's good to read Bhima running through the elephant battalion in Mahabharata, smashing all the elephants. Violence. There should be no violence, right? Should all be peace and sweetness. That's her conception of spiritual life. To be very nice. Like candy floss, sweet. Sickly. This is a common conception that to be spiritual means to be bland and very, very nice. That's kind of natural. Violence is in the material world comes from the mode of ignorance. It's unenlightened. Anger, wrath, war, all these things generally manifested from the mode of ignorance. And so anybody with perspective to see this is just silly, it's cruel, it's unenlightened behavior. Of course, there is proper application of violence. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita. If you read there's one verse, it's early on, it's in the second chapter. Maybe Keshava knows the reference, but Prabhupada says that he's addressing this point specifically. And he's talking about the surgeon taking a knife to the patient and say this is an act of violence, but it's to cut out the tumor. So the proper application of violence is there. Just like the government. What is the government's ultimate threat? The government doesn't go, oh, pretty please, obey the law. No, the government has a certain power. It's like, the other day I left my helmet at the temple, and then I rode into town. I didn't even notice that I was riding without a helmet. And then I was riding back at night, and then I noticed, I don't have a helmet, I better be careful. I put my hood on, and I was riding along. And then I pulled up behind the police car. And I was like, oh, I sneak out the road. And then I hear, oi! I went over and I saw the, and I said, yes, officer. And I said, and he says, where's your helmet, mate? Give us your license. And I was like, they took my details, and they said, and I was like, because I was submissive, they were like, anyway, you know, it's not that we've got a problem with you, but, you know, we just want to look after you, you know, because we see so many times people with their heads cracked open because they're irresponsible for wearing helmets. So we're just trying to help you do the right thing. Anyway, you might get a letter in the mail. So I was like, okay, anyway, what can you do? And I walked my bike back to the temple. Then I got a letter in the mail a while ago. And it said, you have been fined $55 for not wearing a helmet. So I said, okay, I better pay that. And so I sent an email to David, my friend. I gave him some money and sent him an email and said, can you pay this online by credit card? That'll be the easy way to do it. And he said, sure. And then we got really busy. And then eventually he got back to me and said, actually, there's one piece of information you need to give me, some reference number. And I was like, oh, okay, I better get that to you. And then we went catering, and a few things happened, and then it passed the date. It was due on the 24th of December, and it passed the date. So I got another love letter from the police yesterday. And that letter said, payment of, you know, the fine had gone up $20, so that's like $75. And there was the lovely words, you know, very authoritarian and condescending, saying, This fine must be paid by the due date or be prepared to appear in court. Anyway, paid the fine. But the point is, this is the power of the government. The government can just come to you with the handcuffs and a gun and basically say, we're arresting you. And you can go, no. Let's talk about this. Let's be politically correct, have a discussion. You know, I've got my opinions. You've got... No, the government's... Anyway, mate. Just, are you gonna surrender peacefully or are we going to have to use force? So this is the power of the state. Now, if the state's governed by a righteous ruler who's trying to maintain dharma by the application of violence, you know, because naturally there's going to be some conditioned souls who are rebellious and they're just going to commit the law, break the law, and offend others. You know, encroach upon the property of others, rape, steal, murder. This is going to happen. And you can go to them and say, pretty please obey the law. And that might work for some of them. But others, they might just be obstinate. And then you have to use the application of violence to correct them. That's the duty of the Dharma king. Is to do that. That's when Kshatriya, I'm not exactly sure of the breakdown, but it basically means to control by hurting. Control by the application of violence. So that's how Krishna controls the creation. It says in the Bhagavatam that the sun is shining and the wind is blowing out of fear of the Lord. And what is the Lord's mechanism for punishment? Karma. Obey the law and this will happen. Don't obey the law and this other thing will happen. It's completely impersonal to you what you want to do. You know, I'm not controlling you. I'm just giving you a framework in which to make decisions and reactions. So, in the case of Bhagavad Gita, if you read Mahabharata, you see that the Pandavas, so many times they tried to resolve the whole thing peacefully. Yudhisthira was so... had his heart so much set on a peaceful resolution that he even began to frustrate his other brothers, especially Bhima. Bhima was furious. He wanted to crack all their skulls right at that gambling match, you know, when Draupadi was... disrespected. He wanted to crack their skulls right there. He was restrained only by King Yudhisthira's refusal to act and his contemplation of what is the correct thing to do. So it reached the point where there was no other options. And the Pandavas had said, just give us 5 villages. You know, if you're not going to give us out the rightful land, you know, the land to rule that is rightfully ours, then just give us 5 villages because we're Kshatriyas, we have to rule. What else are we going to do? You know, this is our nature. This was also Krishna. When Arjuna said, I'm going to become a Brahmana, go and live in the forest. Krishna said, actually, we've already seen you try to do that. After the house of black, almost, when you escaped from the house of black, you went into the forest. What were you doing the whole time? Fighting? Killing Rakshasas? You couldn't help yourself. Just like the spy that followed the Pandavas back after they'd won Draupadi. To find out whether they are really Brahmins. He was listening in the hut, and they all lay down to go to bed, and what were they talking about? Fighting. This was their whole nature. So, I said, we are Kshatriyas, we have to rule, we have to fight. Just give us 5 villages, so we can rule one each, and in this way we'll, you know, lead a humble Kshatriya existence, and, you know, cultivate spiritual life. And, Duryodhan was obstinate. He said, no, I will not even give you enough land to drive a pin into. Forget it. And at that point, war was certain. So Arjunananda Das Goswami, he sometimes explains, imagine if you woke up tomorrow and say, the Chinese, or the Japanese, whoever, the Russians, had invaded Australia and on every street corner there was a big, tough Russian guy with a submachine gun. And they were looting all the houses and so forth. Now, if there was a civil war, would you be happy if your government came in with guns and tried to liberate you, of course you would. And to protect you. So this is the proper application of violence. The Pandavas are standing up for their rights. And they are devotees, they are upholding Dharma. They are fighting on religious purposes. Yudhisthira would not do anything contrary to Dharma. He was stubborn on that point, actually. Stubborn to the point he even disobeyed Krishna. Because he was so attached to Dharma. So the war was definitely the last resort. And on a higher level, it's the will of Krishna, because Krishna's the purpose of his appearance is to deliver the devotees and to destroy the miscreants. That might be more difficult for your mother to understand in the beginning stages, that Krishna wanted the war. And on another level, if you know, you can read Bhagavad Gita, oh my god, this is horrible, this is a war, then you're missing the point. Because what is the first thing that Krishna says? Those who are wise are meant neither for the living nor the dead. And proceeds to explain, you know, how the spirit soul is transcendental. The real thing is not to be concerned about life or death, but rather to uphold Dharma. This is all explained in Bhagavad Gita. If you just get fixated, oh, this is a battlefield, then you're missing the point, really. You're not taking the philosophical instruction. And in another sense, you can say that, okay, people go to movies. What are the two main themes in movies? Sex and war. Basically, romance and war. Why do people like that? Because it's exciting. So the Lord's not lame and boring. And he just sits there and listens to harp music all day. That would be nice. No. There's a reason we're attracted to excitement and, you know, activities like that. It's because it's in the Lord. People are happy, you know, if there's a war in reality, oh, that's wrong. But they want to see movies full of stuff. Guns and, you know, ninjas and all sorts of stuff. Politics, they want to see all that stuff. Then it happens in the world, oh, this is not right. So those are some points. That covers most of the angles. Anything else? Any comments? Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Don't touch your bottom tongue key. Yes.